series of routine questions I ask. And
might start out with this.
This is not Stars and Kitchen. You don't want to. Look where you felt. That's a good story. Well, tell me, were you born here in Brownwood or nearby?
No, I was born in Dallas, and she was born. She said, leave her out of this. I was born March the 2nd.
It says 1970. That's right. Yeah. Did you come from a ball-playing family at all?
No, sir. I had a brother that was a great football player, but he was 8 years older than me.
He played college ball?
Me?
Did he, your brother?
No, he just played football. And I did in Sunday school, the deal that we go to, I went to, I was a basketball player. I was tall and slender and could jump. And then I played baseball too, sandlot baseball. And I checked off my. Is this running now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We'll run it over and fix the hours.
After Sunday school, I went with another group out in another area on Sunday afternoon. If my mother didn't know about it, and neither did anybody else. But I pitched a no-hit, no-run ball game with from the Jewish people that was on that I was playing against.
Uh-huh.
And all the ball players on the Dallas Ball Club was coming down, going into their park. And we worked with about two blocks from the ballpark down there. They stopped and watched me pitch.
What year would this have been now? About 26 or 5 or...
Let's see.
But we can check up on it.
Walter Morris was the owner of the franchise, and he was a friend of mine and lived about three blocks away from my house. And so they all stopped. And I pitched a no-hit, no-run ball game. So they stayed all that time. And Walter Morris, I sent the other players on to get their workout started. And Walter Morris got me later and asked me to come work out with him. I said, I can't do that because I'm still going to SMU and my Sunday school class, and I can come. I was working. It was in the summertime. I was working with an insurance company, and so he helped me get away from the in where we go now. Okay, I came on down, and they had to get me a suit. I was young enough that I didn't know what to do half the time. But they put me in a uniform and a old catcher. The manager, Snipe Conley, I don't know if you remember him.
I've heard the name. Yes.
Well, he died here just a few days ago. A few weeks ago. But he told this old coach, Bill Allen, it's been so daggum long, I'm trying to put things together so it might, you can adjust it anyway,
I like to do this chronologically, though, you know.
That's what I'm trying to
figure out. So just take your time, and the names help a lot, if you can remember.
Going on with the warming up and pitching to the catcher, mm-hmm. old man, the catcher. Well, I didn't know. I'd throw fastball. And I didn't know what a curve was, as far as that knows, but then I had a knuckle curve. And it was quick and broke snap. Oh, I put up about half a dozen pitches to him, fastballs, and got everything over the plate and have a good control. Then I flipped that as a fingernail deal, curve. And it just popped and hit him right in the shin. It fractured it. Hit him right. He didn't have any protection on. But they signed me after a week.
What was your salary? Remember that?
Well, no, not yet. Yes. Mr. Morris, the owner of the ball club at that time, gave me a $200 bonus to sign and $200 a month. And they wanted me to learn something and be able to work instead of using all...
This is the team.
That's the first steers I had. Hack Miller, home runner, and Scott Perry, a good old time pitcher. And that's his shortstop. I forget his name. This is Bud Hunkling. That was a catcher.
Bernard.
Yeah. And this is another pitcher, Mason. This is another pitcher, and this is Big Tall Slim Love.
For the Yankees.
For a while. And then this is me, and for the rest don't amount anything. Yeah. Well, that was a good catcher, Charlie Berry. And this is a catcher, Josh Bishop.
This was a 26, 1926.
1926.
Let's check and see how we're coming through here now. Okay, you remember the name of that shortstop in that picture.
So.
What was his name again?
Gross. Turkey Gross.
Turkey Gross. Turkey Gross. Oh, okay, good.
And these were all old-timers on the Dallas Ball Club. And so, Walter, I just pitched batting practice for about a week. And they sent me down to Corsicana. And I pitched the first day I pitched. Well, I pitched a no-hit, no-run ball game.
Right.
And I was going with my wife then. Weren't married, though. And they had an interurban at that time from Dallas to Mahia. I caught on at Corsicana. So I got my 50 cents worth up to the on the inurban, and Walter Morris had already heard about the no-hit, no-run ball game all daylight. And so he kept me there. And that 1926. And we married in 1927. I had to get another $200. But left-hander, Dara, and myself, being right-handed, we won the Texas League season, and we went down to New Orleans to play for the
Dixie Series.
The Dixie Series, and this guy with me and myself that was supposed to go to pitch batting practice. Well, the trainer forgot our uniforms. So we sat up there in the grandstand in a box seat. We never had a seat in a box seat, a box seat in my life. And then we got back home.
You didn't pitch then in the Dixie Series?
I didn't down in New Orleans. But I did
back
in one game. And
excuse me a moment. You went down to Corsicana just for the one game?
No.
After the no-hitter, they pulled you right back.
They pulled me right back.
And what league was that in? East Texas?
That was in the Central Texas.
And that was Class A?
No, that was Class D.
Oh, Class D.
Class D.
And the Texas League was Class A then, probably.
Yeah. No, Texas League was Class A.
Yeah. So, but they won the pennant that year.
They won the pennant.
What was your record? Do you remember in 26?
Did
you pitch very much?
I pitched every other day practically.
Is that right?
You don't have too many pitchers.
And Scott Perry and Slim Love.
Well, that was in that picture there, but
over the hill, I guess.
But they were most over the hill.
Yeah.
But in Corsicana was they brought me up from Corsicana.
Well, what about that no-hitter at Corsicana? That was a big thrill, wasn't it?
Oh Lord, yes, I'm telling you.
Did they hit any hard ones off you, or was it you're pretty in control the whole way?
Well, that's too far gone. Uh-huh. That's 1926.
That's a no-hitter.
Yeah, but
that was something to start off with, all right. Well, okay, you're back at Dallas now in the Dixie Series. You got a game there?
Well, I didn't get into it because they had the old-time players and they didn't want me to get hurt or anything like that. But we won. We beat them four times. They went down there. See, it was a 4-7, and we went down there first for two.
Yeah.
Came back for two, or what had to be guns, and so we won four straight.
Yeah.
And I pitched batting practice in the two games, but I didn't play in it. And the next year, Snipe Connelly was the manager.
Yeah.
And the next year, they fired Snipe and got a louse as manager.
Oh.
And because he didn't like young ball players. He was.
Can you mention his name?
Well, I'll have to have to remember it later on. And this new manager, during spring training, he just released me. And so I had an awful good friend that had been a ball player. He was an elderly man. He was in our church. And so So he heard about it, and he was making himself a scout. So he sent me to Palestine, Texas. And there, I won 16 ball games. And it was a short season, see, you know, those Class D.
Is that the same league as Corsicana?
Yeah.
Central Texas.
And so they sold me to the San Francisco Seals. And they sent me right then off to Seattle.
Was this during the 27 season?
Yeah, during the 27 season. And so I'd never ridden a one of those choo-choos,
right.
And scared to death, and in a way.
Had you been away from home much before?
No.
It's kind of a new experience that way.
Just right around Dallas here, right there. Played basketball, and I never did play any football.
Did you go to Southern Methodist?
Yes, for 2 years.
Oh, I see.
And I worked, and then after getting work, I had my schedule at SMU arranged to where my classes stopped at noon. And I got a job with the insurance man that was a friend of mine, life insurance. And
what did you plan to study? Or what did you have any major?
I was
field
going to study for a doctor.
Oh, I see.
And I got out of that system right quick.
It's a pretty tough field, isn't it?
Yeah.
Baseball is the reason you didn't go back then after the second year? I mean, you were playing ball by then, was that?
Yeah, I was.
So you didn't go back to Southern Methodist for a third
year? No, no. No, I went back. And then I had too much to do at the insurance company.
Oh,
I just forgot everything going to school again. And
okay, tell me about going out to Seattle now with the Seals.
Didn't go to the Seals. I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I went back to the Seals. The first one was the Missions.
Oh, yeah.
I went with the Missions at first. And then...
They're in San Francisco.
60 years gone.
Did the Missions play in the same ballpark as the Seals?
Yes, after they built the Seals ballpark. But the Missions were nothing but a beer drinking deal. We had a lot of fun. I never drank or any beer.
Who was the manager out there, the Missions?
Bill Killifer, but
Wade.
And they then started building a new stadium in San Francisco. And then they got this George Burns, an old first baseman. He became the manager. And for some reason or other, he didn't like me. So he fired me.
Was this in 27 now?
27. No.
You finished out the season with the Missions in 27.
Yeah.
Maybe.
28.
And it was 28 in that spring training deal. But there was the new field had already been fixed. And the scout was out there. And he had seen me. Pitched the year before, and one other pitcher besides me that George Burns kicked us out. He didn't want any young players.
His young players, really.
Yeah, he didn't like young players. And I better stop saying my wife slapped me down. But
who was the scout? You remember?
Willis Butler. Well, he was an elderly man, and I had just been fired.
Thank you.
I had just been fired from the ball club there.
I don't think.
And he came up to me. Let me watch you. Warm up and what you can show me. I might be able to help you. Well, he was a scout in the California area for, I'll get it in a minute, for Wichita Falls. But instead, they decided I was good enough. See, that was the Texas League.
Yeah.
Good enough, and they needed a good right-handed pitcher in Milwaukee. So they sent me to Milwaukee, and they jumped me to $400.
Now, the scout,
yeah.
Had really sold you to Milwaukee, or he made the deal for you?
Well, he was a scout for that. Or
Wichita Falls?
Wichita Falls and Milwaukee, too. And so he fixed it that I'd better go there instead of Texas, because that's too close to my home. So
that's the 28th season now. You're up at Milwaukee.
Yes. 28, 29, and 30.
Oh, I see.
And
who's the manager up there?
I'll have to look here.
Well, we can probably find it. We'll probably think of it for a while.
Thank you.
We'll talk about it.
Good one.
Bill Killefer, then, huh? Boy, isn't that a nifty little picture.
Yeah, there he is, right there.
Although he's wearing the mission's uniform.
See, it says, Knott will go to Steers Sunday for trial on the mound.
Uh-huh.
Then get to Dallas.
Yeah,
there.
Back in 26.
Yeah.
So Bill Killefer was in Milwaukee. Is that what you're saying?
No, Bill Killefer was with the mission.
I see, yeah. Okay.
It was the mission. And
Frank O'Rourke?
Frank O'Rourke didn't come until we went to Milwaukee.
Yeah, okay. Frank O'Rourke. The old Browns third baseman. The old Browns third baseman.
Yes, he sure was. He was a good one, too.
Okay.
Well, what we got?
Well, up in Milwaukee now in 1928, how'd you do that year?
Well, I did good all three.
Oh, did you? That's in the
score. Oh, now here.
I didn't want to mark the table.
The San Francisco shipped me here to the Southern League. Excuse me, she came.
Talking about Milwaukee now in 28. And
well, I'm a little bit wrong in this. They sent me first to you're not running now.
Yeah, it's just
children.
the missions sent me to Chattanooga.
Okay.
And then we did a good, and San Francisco, the missions, called me back after they saw I had the stuff to go to the Southern League, and you don't care about seeing
those. Joe Engel down to Chattanooga?
Yeah.
And Joe Engel.
Yeah, Joe Engel.
The Barnum of baseball.
Yep. And this is our manager was the front row, Elliot Bigelow, you remember that, Luther Roy, Wineapple, Eddie Kenna.
Yeah.
John Singleton, Merle Settlemeyer, pitcher, Tiny Goodbread, coach, Sparky Matthews, Cowboy Tomlin, Bobby Lamont, Sammy Vick, Art Decatur, myself.
That's Chattanooga.
Yeah.
In 27, I think.
That's in 27, yeah. And they brought me back again.
To the missions.
And then, after that,
Burns came to manage.
I went into Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It was a good AAA. So this is some
Chattanooga
pitches locals to another win over Georgians.
Uh-huh.
5-2. But,
yeah. Okay, now you got Milwaukee there for.
Yeah, I've
28.
These here are young pitchers. Jack McDonald wrote this. The Notch pitching has had considerable to do with what might jokingly be referred to as a missions pennant drive. That's Killifer. Deal. We're still in that court instead of getting Jim Turner was an awful good pitcher with the missions.
He's the one that went up with Boston Bees and
when
he was 30 years old and won 20 games.
Yep.
I wonder why he was down so long.
Well, he helped me.
How was that?
Well, just to get him in.
Tips on.
Yep.
I was going to ask you that, as a young pitcher coming up, do the old-timers try to help you or just not tell you anything because you might take their job away? You hear a lot about that.
Yeah, it was worse then than now.
But Turner didn't help you, though.
Yeah.
He was an exception to that rule.
Sure did. It made me feel good enough that it didn't bother me. I had to be knocked out or anything else.
Did your curveball develop then, or did you, approved by Milwaukee?
I used fingernail.
How'd you throw a lot of spitballs?
No, I only one or two.
You obeyed the rules, huh?
Only one or two. I didn't do any spitballs, I just get it back behind the neck. This is Missions in Portland. That's still in the Coast League.
Pretty good record out of the missions apparently there. Do you remember any one-loss record at all?
No, I don't.
We got some averages in there, that's all.
Now, here's where I got with the Brewers in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Jack Dempsey came, and this is our manager there.
Who was he again?
See if he's in here. Willis Butler.
Oh, he's the manager.
No, he was a...
He's a scout.
He was a scout, but he came up there because he recommended me to them. Says missions fire young hurler, stars in the east.
That'll teach him.
Yeah. And I had 2 good years here. And then the St. Louis Browns brought me up. They owned the Milwaukee club.
Is this Ernest Borchert? Was he the president?
Yes,
did you have any dealings with him at all?
No, he was almost dead when I got there.
And your ballpark was?
It was Borchert Park.
Borchert Park. Was that a good ballpark to pitch in?
Well, it didn't bother me much.
Must have been.
But it was just like this, with
wide foul line,
high field, I mean fence. high boards, fences, but they're only about 200 feet down the line, and they got a lot of home runs. But
center field was much deeper, but the foul lines were short.
The foul lines were short. I guess it wouldn't be over 150 feet.
150?
Until it would go over the fence. Yeah, you had to make it go in the center field.
You really had to be careful.
You had to be careful of it.
Couldn't pitch inside to the left-hand hitters. did you pitch against Joe Hauser that year? Remember Joe?
Yeah, in Minneapolis.
I spent about 3 hours with him one day. He's up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Yeah. And 1930 was one of his good years. He hit over 60 homers that year. So he must have got some inside to him, maybe.
He started there in Dallas in 1927.
How about Nick Cullop? Remember pitching to Nick?
Yep. He didn't bother me.
Oh, is that right? How'd you pitch to him? Do you remember? I mean, he was a power hitter.
I think I pitched him right here, right over his belly, right in there.
Yeah.
He was getting a little heavy then. but he was a good ball player.
Yeah. He's up in Columbus now, Columbus, Ohio, not far from where we live.
You remember the great Shires?
Yeah, did you know him? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about him.
I played with him. He was...
He's as good as he thought he was?
Oh, he sure was. And he could hit. Uh-huh. He'd spray. He didn't hit very long.
Uh-huh.
And...
But he was a tough player to handle, I expect.
No. He was easy going to get along.
Rough out.
If anybody... goes after him, he's going to get hurt.
Uh-huh.
And but he was a good ball player.
Nice chap, then.
Nice chap.
Uh-huh.
We liked him fine.
Hello.
And his little wife, the same.
They didn't live too far from here, did they? Or,
they lived in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The Shires came back when he came back from baseball. He had a dining room up on a hill down in North Dallas.
Uh-huh.
He was good.
Art the Great. He did some prize fighting, I guess, too, didn't he? Or professional wrestling? Or?
No, he didn't do it as far as I know.
Uh-huh.
If anybody wanted to hit at him or something, well, he'd go after him. Let's see.
Where did you play with him? With the
Milwaukee? At Milwaukee. He was a spray hitter.
Yeah.
He'd hit that ball all over the place. Not too far. But he just sprayed that. He was always in the 300 field.
Do you remember Lute Boone with Louisville or Minneapolis? Or
Boone.
Boone. B-O-N-E. Not Ike Boone. This is Lute Boone, who was infielder of Minneapolis. For a while there.
No. I can remember him.
Well, tell me about how the Browns got you then.
Well, because the Browns, they were the main part of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
They owned or worked with Milwaukee. And so that's how I got to the majors.
Well, I saw in there in your scrapbook it said they signed you in 1931.
Yeah.
But you didn't start pitching with them until 33.
Yeah, that's right.
So where were you those 2 years?
Milwaukee.
Back?
That was Milwaukee, 31 and 32. 31, 32 in Milwaukee.
And 29 and 30 you also?
No, 29 and...
It seems like you were there 4 years then. Would that be right? I should have brought my other encyclopedia along, but I don't have
your... I first went to the majors in 1933.
Yeah.
And I had 2 years with Milwaukee. That's 29.
Well, what was that? How'd you feel going up to the big leagues now, after all these years in the Texas League and Coast League? And
oh, well, I figured I could do the job.
Uh-huh. Who was managing the Browns then?
Bill Killifer.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. How did he treat you when you got up there?
He never did talk anything, but uh-huh. He just said, let's go out and get them, boys, that's all. He was a good old man.
Who were some of the players? Do you remember in the team then when you first went up?
Well, I'll have to get... Well, this was a Milwaukee deal.
Boy, that's a beautiful scrapbook. See.
Ted Gulick?
Oh, yeah. Ted Gulick. I always liked that name. Jack Burns, was he first baseman then?
Oh, he was first baseman.
And Oscar Malello, I guess, was still there, wasn't
Oscar Malello, oh yeah. Good second baseman.
Yeah.
And boy, he was funny. He was a funny guy.
Telling jokes or stuff he'd do?
Oh,
or?
Yeah. And he was sure good.
He kept the team loose, huh?
Yeah, he kept them loose.
What would he do? Do you remember anything he did? Or?
No. He just liked to play ball, and he knew how to play it.
How about your shortstop, Red Crest?
No, he was at first.
Jim Levy, I guess.
Jim who?
Levy.
Yeah, he came after. But he couldn't hit. And we...
third base.
So Killifer's herders and defense stopped Streets' men. Milwaukee ballpark was for most of the ball players, I didn't like it. But with me, the center field was the longest.
Center field, the league,
center
probably.
Field was the only real long part. Mm-hmm. And I'd change up, hit a fly ball, and I always, in that part, I didn't want to fool anything except make them run and catch it.
How about your outfield on there at St. Louis when you joined them? Ted Gulick. How about Fred Scholey?
Who?
Fred Scholey.
No, he wasn't there. He was at the Cardinals.
Sure. Heinie Manouche or Goose Goslin or any of them with the Browns? I guess they were over at Washington.
He was at Washington all the time while I was there.
Who your left fielder was. How about Julius Solers? Did he come in there?
Oh, yeah.
Moose
Solers, yes.
He was there. He passed away. He was up in Pittsburgh.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. He became blind, you know, and had a couple of strokes and heart attacks.
Bill Killifer. Was my first manager in the majors, Bill Killifer.
Uh-huh.
These other two.
Who is this fella here?
Kaufman.
Dick Kaufman.
And this was a left-hander.
Wally Hebert.
Yeah.
He's over in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
He went by his home there.
And this a Georgian down there. I forget his name.
Number seven is...
Oh, there'll be in there. They call it
Lloyd Brown.
Yeah, Lloyd Brown. Left-hander.
Yeah. He moved around, played a lot of teams.
That's number one. Jack Crouch, catcher.
Sam West, yeah. We called him last night. He not well?
His mother. I was going to tell Mrs.
We were going to go up to Lubbock maybe tomorrow for an interview, but must have been his wife answered the phone and said that his mother living at Haskell is very ill, and they didn't know if they might be called away at any moment, so they couldn't make any commitment.
That's what we were waiting for.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Well, you knew Sam West pretty well then.
Oh, yeah. We roomed together 6 years.
Is he much of a talker?
Oh, not much.
Do you think he'd like to be interviewed? Like to get to see him?
Well, not in the situation
his
parents are.
How old is mother? Must be quite old.
Oh, about 90-something.
93.
He was a fine ball player.
He's here. $3 stores.
That's Pinky Higgins from Dallas, huh?
Yeah.
And Les Mallon. He was the infielder.
Yeah, he was a second baseman, shortstop.
Yeah.
And this is for the mission.
Yeah.
And, that's the only thing, only.
That's here.
But they told. This is Pinky Higgins here.
Mm-hmm.
And Les Mallon.
They broke in 1970, 1933. I've got that picture.
Yeah.
I took the Sporting News all those years, and I cut that one out. There's some scrapbook.
I've already seen that. This is... Well, I haven't seen that. Astarte and...
Lynn Starty.
See, Lynn Starty and...
That's Garms I see there, huh?
Yeah, Garms.
He's down here somewhere.
Ted Gulick.
Huh?
This is Garms.
He lives around here, doesn't he? Somewhere?
Yeah, up here. He's dead.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Where's Gulick from?
Gulick? Well, I don't know where he came from. Let me see if I can find something.
We can find that out later. It says here you made a fine debut for the Browns. Do you remember that game?
Yep, sure did.
Tell me a little bit about it.
That was in spring training.
Go ahead.
It was my first one. But
this is in 33 now then.
32, right? Yeah. I can't recall, but I think they started me in spring. The first ball game in spring training in 33. And I don't know if I've got it here or not.
Were you with him then? Oh, it's not.
I don't recall anything like that. The Oscar Melillo.
You remember that first game, though? I mean, it must just must stand out in your memory.
Yeah. Three times. I started with St. Louis. Then I was traded to the White Sox. And then I was traded to Philadelphia Athletics. And every time I pitched the first game, I won it. For each I won my first game in St. Louis. I won my first game in Chicago. And I won my first game in Philadelphia. Johnny Mack. And
why did they trade you from St. Louis to Chicago, you remember? Who was in the deal?
As far as I know, it was just cash. Well, she knows more about it than I do. She kept up with it.
Were you unhappy to be traded from the Browns or sold?
Yeah, but I wanted to.
You wanted to pitch, right?
Hadn't traded for a long, several years.
Is that a name there? I quite recognize it. Cox.
Cox.
Thank you. Well, was it kind of...
too small to participate in sports in high school. And I wasn't. They wouldn't let me.
How big were you in high school?
I was about 145.
How tall were you?
About 5'11".
Oh, that's not too bad. Really,
and
for that time.
I just pitched the sandlot.
You didn't play high school ball then?
No. But they had a high school and a team. A team in the high school. They wouldn't let me play. I was too small.
You played basketball?
Yeah, but that was Sunday school. I was skinny and tall. I sent it.
You began to put on some weight after you.
Oh, yeah.
Got in high school.
She fed me too good. She fed me too good.
Well, what was it like playing with the St. Louis Browns in the 1930s? There's a nostalgia kicked today about the old St. Louis Browns. Really?
Well,
a team that never won a pennant, except in the war.
I didn't get there until 33.
And they always seemed to be a second division team. And was there something discouraging?
Old man Ball, the owner of the ball club.
Yeah, old Ball.
He's the one that wouldn't put out any money. The first money I really got that was worthwhile in those days was at Milwaukee. They paid me $400 a month. Then when they sold me, it was a family deal down to St. Louis Browns. Well, I had to stay there on that $400 deal until they didn't want to send me back with a big
salary.
But I never did go back. And I didn't get too much more money either in St. Louis. But
what kind of, did you talk to Phil Ball or meet him?
Ever
meet Phil Ball?
Oh, yeah.
What kind of a man was he, would you say?
He was quiet, stubby, kind of heavy, fat. The only time I would see him, he had a press box for him to watch the ball game. And in spring training, he would come out to watch the workouts at San Antonio. That's where we were doing then. And he never did say anything bad against anybody, I don't think.
And when you had your contract talks each year, did you deal with Ball, or was there some business manager you dealt with?
No.
Who would
you
deal with?
There were no business managers those days.
Who would you deal with, Ball directly?
I had to deal with him.
you get a letter of your contractor in the winter months,
yeah,
and then you send it back if you didn't like it.
Didn't like it. I had to, mainly, after the season in Milwaukee, I was getting $600 in Milwaukee. And I came back, I came to St. Louis the next year. And they cut me to $400. And I told him, I told Mr. Ball, I said, Mr. Ball, I pitched for your club in Milwaukee, and I got $600. He said, well, I'll give you $600 and more if you can make our team. So he sucked me into that. And still left me all season long.
$400.
I never did go back to Milwaukee. I got the $400, that's all.
But then you got a raise the next year.
A little bit, yeah. Up to $600.
Did he, didn't he didn't have the money? I thought he was a pretty wealthy man.
Well, he was wealthy, but he didn't want to spend it.
He had was he in the icebox business, or what did he have there in St. Louis? Was he at hospital or something? He was a close friend of Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson died in Ball's hospital, I think.
He was always on the sideline in a box seat.
He really liked the game, man.
Ball game, oh yes. And he was down at San Antonio or Florida all the time. If we were in either one of those places, he was there.
Well, who came after Killifer? You had Roger Shornsby for manager for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I wish he
was like,
there.
Did you like? Didn't like him.
He was the worst thing that ever lived.
Why was that? Expect everybody to be as good as he was, or harsh rules, I guess, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, he had had two coaches that he let them run the ball players. He didn't associate with the ball players. And except on the field. And I don't know, he just was a snotty guy. He could have hit that ball in his day. He could really hit that ball in a day. I never did pitch against him.
Did he, do you think he handled players very well?
No, he let
the coaches do it.
Huh? The coaches do everything, because he was in St. Louis. He would go back under the stands and phone a bookie, and then he'd come out an hour later.
It's crazy about the horses, wasn't
it? Oh yeah.
I saw him. I saw St. Louis play in Cleveland. I grew up in Cleveland, and I think 1936 when. The year or so he was managing the team, they played a game in the stadium there, and he came in and pinch hit, right? Of course, he hadn't played ball for a year or so, I guess, and that was the only time I did get to see Roger Hornsby back. He got a beautiful base hit that one time, a line.
He was a good hitter.
A line drive right out of
it. And he could run if he wanted to.
I guess all these great ball players aren't very good managers because their players can't play as well as they did. So
here's a younger wife there.
Oh yeah.
I had a finger broken.
That's a nice picture. How was that broken?
Well, I was pitching, and line drive came, and I, instead of using my gloved hand, I put my other hand in, and it broke. It didn't break it. It just one of these joints was knocked out.
Well, could you throw as well when
no.
it healed?
Oh, yeah, after it healed up.
Maybe you could throw better.
No, I couldn't be throwing better because I was doing good out there.
Do you remember what year that was then? Because you had a couple of real good years here. 34 and 35 would be good. Did you ever get hit in the head from a batted ball? Or in the legs or anything? When you're pitching, you know, the ball come off or
no.
Come close?
Well, the
batsman's come back through there. You.
This is the Milwaukee.
Well, that happened in Milwaukee?
Yeah, this was in Milwaukee.
That broken finger, I see.
Yeah.
Or that bent finger.
I was playing in Indianapolis, pitching. Uh-huh. And the ball was hit right in front of me. But it hit something and
it bounced
over my head. And I jabbed it in there and it just bent that. And so they sent me home. And this is Garland Braxton's wife.
Oh, yeah. Garland Braxton. He lived up around Chicago, I guess. Never got to see him. Did you ever hit anybody in the head as a pitcher?
Yep. Two times.
How did that affect you as a pitcher?
Well, I wasn't throwing. I've been throwing for it, Patty.
Who'd you hit, do you remember who it was?
Well, one was a Class D ball down in Palestine. He was in Tyler. That's where he was, and that's where I was pitching there. And it hurt that guy pretty good. He hit high on the head, so it didn't bother anything like that. And the other one,
not in the big time?
No, it was in the...
So?
That was in the D-League down in Palestine.
The other one, too?
No.
Kansas City?
Kansas City, yeah. And we had a fight. We had a real...
Oh, is that
real
right?
Rainbow.
Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, that was... I hit the guy, and... It didn't hurt him, but all those ball players, they ran after me.
What did you do?
I ran most of them off. But,
anybody get hurt?
Only he and me.
Who was he? Did you remember who he was? Kansas City?
Oh, it was some left hand. Oh, yeah, it was one of the big players. And that's why they wanted me castrated, put it that way. he was a big hitter. And I don't have that picture because that was in the minor
league. Did you get hurt? Did it actually hurt you in the fight?
No.
Most of these fights are just a lot of wild swinging, but sometimes somebody gets hurt.
Well,
where'd you hit him? You hit him on the head?
Hit him on the side of his head. Uh-huh. It mashed his earlobe here, not low, but
it knocked him out or anything.
It made him very dizzy. Uh-huh. And I could throw hard those days, and we don't have any of the kind of hats that they have now. Uh-huh. But
did that upset you? I mean, pitching after that incident.
Well, I was sorry about it.
Yeah,
all
sure.
Like but that, but the ball sailed.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't throwing at him at all. But for some reason or other, he was a right-hand hitter. Uh-huh. And the ball just faded that way, and he was riding in.
Uh-huh.
And he got hit right about here.
Right of center.
It didn't hurt anything, except made him dizzy for a couple of days.
Remember Roy Parmalee?
Oh, yeah.
I talked with him, and he said he hit a lot of people in the head. He had about five people in his career in the head. He's a very hard thrower, and he had poor control. But after every time he hit somebody in the head, they had to take him out of the game, because upset him. He couldn't pitch.
I remember him on that hard throwing.
He was with Toledo, probably. You were with
Toledo. That's where he was. And they made him slow up. And then he finally got in the groove. He could throw that ball hard. It was mostly underhand.
I guess he really gets upset.
I'm trying to find one guy that's in here.
The 34 and 35, you had pretty good years with the Browns.
Yeah.
10 and 3 and 11 and 8 when they were well below 500, so.
They were in the 350 to 400.
Yeah, so that's, how'd you win so many games with such a team?
Oh, they
couldn't win.
Well, I don't know about them being, not being winning. I had confidence, and the ball players on the Browns, they liked me and figured that they had a chance to win a ball game anytime I stepped out there. And I did, practically. And, you know,
did you have a favorite catcher at that time of the Browns? Or somebody you worked well with?
Oh, Jack Crouch. The young, well, I know him. Jack Crouch was a young catcher coming up out of the Texas League, and that's the day he was playing. This day here, and
but with the Browns then, is there anybody there who you liked to have behind the plate when you were pitching that worked well with?
Yeah. Raleigh Hensley.
Oh, Raleigh. Rollicking Raleigh.
I was in Milwaukee place.
Crouch, yeah. Hensley's a pretty good man behind the plate there.
He could run, and he could hit.
Could he catch?
And catch. But he
couldn't take care of himself.
Take care of himself. Yeah. Then he finally, later on, got a manager at Minneapolis, I think it was. No, it was Toledo. Then they fired him. He got to drinking again.
Well, he can't handle himself. He can't handle a player. But when Hensley was catching for you, would you know just about what to call, or would you? Did you go over the players before the game and know what you're going to pitch to them?
Yeah. But you can't always go by that.
Can't?
Well, if you can, but if you do it the same way all the time, some of these guys that are good hitters, they'll know what's going to be coming or something like that. But
how did you pitch to Lou Gehrig?
Lou Gehrig was one of the easiest, hardest men that hit a ball. But I didn't have very much trouble with him. I'll tell you one thing, going back to the that place. Mickey Higgins was one of a Dallasite, man, good ball player.
Good hitter.
Yes, he was.
Pitched against your old.
You speaking of that, good hitter. I was pitching St. Louis, and he was third baseman that
In the athletics at that time.
And so I started pitching. First ball, I hit three balls out into the bleachers before I ever got the ticket.
The first three batters hit home runs?
The first three batters hit home runs. And all of my friends down here in Brownwood, they said, "Oh my God, he's going to get killed." But then I finished the ball game with no more scores.
Is that right?
I won the ball game 3-4-3.
Yes, I'm settling down.
Yeah.
The way things can turn around in a game.
Pinky Higgins was a good hitter and a good third baseman.
How'd you pitch to Al Simmons?
Al Simmons?
Throw a foot in the bucket.
I didn't get too much time with
you didn't pitch too much against him?
No. Philadelphia.
Well, I mean, when he was with the A's and you were with the Browns.
I didn't have any problem with it.
Is that a funny batting stance when he's, you know, that left foot is pulled around? Is it, how does it, must be tough to pitch to. I mean, it was not a good batting stance by everything they tell you. But Jimmy Fox, remember?
Jimmy Fox, I remember him well. Pinky Higgins, Fox, and one or two more.
Well, Cochran was with him.
Cochran.
He went over to Detroit.
Getting back to this, Cochran, that you mentioned that. In spring training in 1933,
San Antonio, were you?
No, we weren't. 33, down in Florida. Oh. And we came back, and got into the ball game, started in St. Louis, and our first was not our first deal, but Pinky Higgins was on Philadelphia, and I was with the Browns. And I was pitching in St. Louis. Well, the first ball I pitched was hit into the bleachers. And then the next ball I pitched, after they came around, they hit another home run in the bleachers. And Al Simmons was the third guy up, and he hit his in the right field bleachers. Three home runs on three balls. And then I won 4-3.
Well, that was your first year then that happened, in 33?
No, it was about, 33 was the first.
You won your first game there with him. But
I don't know if it was the first one or not.
Oh, we can check on that. What happened in 36 and 37? Or don't you want to talk about those years?
Well, they didn't give me much satisfaction.
Did you sue for non-support?
Yes, sir. Well, that was the weakest.
Did they cut your pay after those years?
No, I was traded.
Well, you 9-17 in 36.
Yeah.
Did they cut you after that year?
No, they didn't. They couldn't cut any lower. $400 a month.
It was still $400?
No, it got up to about $600.
Uh-huh. How do you account for that year? Was
I don't know. I just forgot all about it.
Well, your earned run average is pretty high in 36, but in 37, the earned run average came down, mm-hmm. but you still lost a lot of games, so You must. You were pitching better at 37,
that,
I guess.
That was defense.
Pretty poor defense.
We didn't have any shortstops at all.
Was Storty with you then, or?
He was there.
Levy. How about Ollie Bama? He come around yet?
Ollie Bama was a fair second baseman, but it just they wouldn't give a pitcher a chance.
Couldn't field. They tried hard, but they tried hard.
I don't know if they didn't like me or not, but anyway, here it is. Athletics hit three homers off Mott on four pitch ball. That's right there.
That's quite a game. It came. George Blayholder came in. He always.
Yeah, he.
I think he had the screwball or the fadeaway or something.
Yeah, he had a sinker, had a good sinker.
He was really the founder of the slider, I guess.
I did the slider and changeup. These pitchers going now, they don't know how to mix up a change of pace. They all throw, slider. That slider's going to break your dead gum elbow after.
It's unnatural motion.
Yeah.
But then they don't pitch as long either. They pitch three innings, somebody comes in and takes their place.
A lot of people game, don't they?
When you went out to pitch, you were supposed to pitch the whole game, weren't you?
You didn't have
somebody warming up to come in after three innings.
Yeah. I pitched 90% of them.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit of short relief at the end. Who were some other pitchers? Was Sam Jones in the Browns?
He was there at the time that I came in, and he helped me a good.
Was that right?
Yeah, he. He was old then.
You couldn't take in his job, so he was glad to help you.
He just stayed that 1 year, and then he got sick and he died in about 2 years. Two more years.
Well, Sam Jones or Sam Gray?
Sam Gray.
Yeah, Sam Jones.
Sam Gray.
Because Sam Jones lives only about 25 miles from where we live, you know, in Woodsfield, Ohio. And
I don't know Sam Jones.
What do you call him?
Sad
Sam Jones.
Is that right?
Yeah. But he pitched with the Yankees for a year and the Red Sox, but he was probably, I guess he wasn't with the Browns then. He may have been through by the time you came up. But that was an old-time Yankee pitcher. It was pretty good. Back in the days of Wade Hoyt and so on. But I was thinking he might have been with the Browns. But Sam Gray was the one that helped you then. Right?
He showed me how to make a real curveball fall off the table. And that gave me three, four pitches. A good change, a little slider, and a good fastball. And he really helped.
How was your control overall? Did you have much problem with control?
Not too much. Not too much.
How about a move to first base? Did you work on that a lot?
Well, I was going to tell you before we started on this field here, but my little shortstop in 1935, he came up from the Coast League and was a shortstop. And he and I got together in spring training. That's 35, when he got into the spring training. And he and I, we were still in training, and we were playing Terry. He's stuck in the water. I'll get to it before long.
Who was the shortstop? Was it Storty then?
Storty was third baseman, and Levy was shortstop until
Alan Strange.
Alan Strange
Alan
came.
Strange.
He ran Levy off, but he could handle that ball, and he knew how to play. He just came to. He was up in California, someplace, and
he developed a pickoff play with Strange?
Yeah. He and I worked a pickoff play. And we were playing Bill Terry, the Giants. And did you want to change?
That's going to be pretty hard to pick up with the fan.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's
well, let's go over on this side.
Might still. Oh, I see.
Okay. It won't be much longer.
Yeah.
We had this play, the guy on second. And when I'd come down, and I'd either step off or throw, but well, we called his name, I just forgot it. It was the first time that he had been in Major League.
Strange?
Strange, yeah. Alan Strange. So we worked and worked in spring training. Me getting down here and Alan over there in the second baseman there and like that. And hitting the ball. And with men on base, just practicing. Well, we had a Bill Terry, the managing the Giants, and they were going to play us. And I was to pitch. So I came down, the guy got on second base, and I came down, and I whirled around to throw to second, which I did, but I threw it over the guy's head. But then after that, well, Bill Terry said, that is a dadgum good play. I'm going to get five Giants to work on that too. But I said, Bill, that's the first time I've thrown it. That I could tell him that because he was in the National League. And we finally perfected that game. And I think, I don't have, but we, I think we got at least 15 to 20 off base. And then when I went to Chicago, White Sox, well, I gave them Luke Appling. I gave him the sign, but then Joe Kuhl was the first baseman for Chicago there. And so I worked out a deal with him, even with somebody on second base. Because he was left-handed. And he was, with a man on first and second, he would back off a little bit. And then when I gave the nod, one, two.
You nodded your head.
I'd come down like this. Not one. And I'd throw to the second baseman. Well, they'd come back with the man on first and second. So I'd come down again, and I had one, two, and whirled, and the cue was behind the guy, and we got both of them. Because the other one started running, see.
Did you get him a third?
A third, yeah. And Mickey Cocker, playing in Detroit. Mickey was the manager. And the same dadgum thing happened. I came down, and he had never seen this deal before. And so Alan Strange, the only thing he did was then say one, and run to the bag. And we had Mickey just beat it 2 feet. And he said, "God damn, I'm finding myself $100. And he never did it anymore, though. But on that season, Strange and myself got 18. Got 18 of those off, either first base or second. And that helps the ball club pretty good.
You got to have an awful quick motion to do that, to pivot and not balk and throw straight and not too high. You were the White Sox in 1940 then.
Yes, yes.
Remember the Jackie Hayes business?
Yeah, yes, sure
did. Can you tell me a little bit about what you remember from that? We've interviewed Hayes, you see, over in Clanton, Alabama.
Oh, sure enough.
Yeah, just last
year. Well, all I know, I haven't seen him for, 20 years, I guess. But he was an awful good second baseman. And he could hit the ball and advance the base runners if he was on there. If a baseman was on there, he would either slice a ball or
He bunted awful good. Well, this I heard from Ted Lyons, I guess, that this was he got a cinder in his eye.
Well, he had that a long time.
In spring training in 1940. He got the cinder in his left eye.
Yeah.
And that's what started it off.
Started it off.
And he played half that year, actually, with only one eye. Was he behind there when you were pitching, when he was playing with one eye?
At Chicago, Ted put on, we pitched doubleheaders. Ted would pitch the opening, and I pitched the second. We did that 7 times, as far as I can recall. It may have been more. It was all on Sunday. We pitched nothing on Sunday, except on Sunday. And
so Hayes was playing the first part of the season.
Yeah, he was playing first place. Well, he played all that season.
Could you see the bad eye affecting his play in any way?
Yes, he did. He missed quite a lot of them.
You really see it?
He'd slap one down. He'd get close enough where he'd slap at it, and it wouldn't do any good.
Did the players kind of get troubled by this? That they had a man out there who wasn't really able to see the ball?
The doctors, he was told to go to the doctor. In Chicago, where we were. And he just got deteriorated all over, and they just took him off. Didn't want to hurt him. And and he went back to his home after the season. He stayed all season. Uh-huh. But he was a good second baseman. He had a good quick wrist on him.
Soldiers, he got hit in the, I guess in 1941 when he was batting practice, just fooling around out in the infield, and the ball, ground ball, hit him in the
41, 42, those guys with the athletics.
Yeah. Well, that's when he got, the incident started him on his blindness, you know. Yeah. Although it didn't happen as quick as it took a number of years for him. But just these crazy little accidents which happened.
Isn't he blind in both eyes?
Yeah. The right one went in 1943.
Yeah. And he's had a heart attack. And
yeah, he's on his, I don't know how many pacemakers he's had.
Yeah, and he didn't suspect that he had a pacemaker.
And he's on his fifth seeing eye dog.
Yeah, but I think it's, his wife was just as sweet as she could be. But she was real nervous. In fact, I wouldn't even go in if she was in there. And then by the time I got back.
Earnshaw could throw that ball hard, but I beat him.
Is that right?
I beat him twice.
Is that right? You beat Lefty Grove?
I don't remember about beating him, but I know I knocked him out of the ballpark.
How'd you do that?
It's just saying about a ballpark. Lefty Grove.
Yeah.
I was pitching that day, and he was pitching against me. St. Louis. No, not in St. Louis. It was in Philadelphia. And I hit a line drive and hit him in the head, right here.
In the middle of the
floor. He had that long arm and was hitting the it just hit right in front of him.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first time I ever knocked him out. Everybody.
He fell flat in his face?
Oh, yeah, he fell backwards and then staggered.
Uh-huh. You got a hit.
Oh, yeah, I got a base hit.
Did he stay in the game?
No.
That's one way to get him out of there, isn't it?
Yeah, because he could really throw.
How did you get along with the umpires?
Oh, I tried to kid them along. Say you did a good job, stuff like that. You know. Most of them were. I didn't have any problems at all with.
Did you get put out of any games?
Nope.
Well, that's quite an achievement.
Yeah, I think you're probably one of the best
we've ever
talked to.
Yeah, most of them, even though they.
Even if they didn't do anything like that. Yeah.
Did you have a favorite umpire you'd like to have behind the plate when you were pitching, or didn't matter much?
Oh,
George, Bill McGowan, maybe. Or?
Well, he was a rang dangle guy, but Bill Hubbard.
Hubbard, yeah.
He was so big and could stand over, and he got everything done.
Couldn't he miss some low ones though? He was so high up he couldn't.
No. Not that I know of. He always came up in St. Louis to our apartment and have a little drink. Just one. That's all he would drink. See, he's a Texan.
He fraternized with the ball players?
Well, but they didn't know where he was going.
Well, that's nice.
He was a good friend of ours.
I think the umpires
and
such.
So was Fred Marbury.
Oh,
yeah.
Football Marbury.
Fred Marbury.
He's from Texas, isn't he?
Yeah.
Are you Texas?
Marbury was. Who is it? Roger Peckinpah told me once that it was Marbury, who taught him the real value of a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
Back in the 20s, Marbury was one of the first that he knew could really come in and help out. That was before we've gotten into this relief pitching business today. Where
that's what started me. I'd relieve.
Oh, is that right? You were a relief pitcher.
I relieved a lot.
Would you like that?
It didn't make any difference. I wanted to play.
I see.
I had enough rest, I wanted to play.
But you did become a starter after a while,
though. Oh, yeah. At Chicago, in White Sox, Ted Lyons and myself, I may have said this before, there was a doubleheader every Sunday. Well, Ted Lyons worked the first game, and I worked the second. And 11 ball games each, we won every one of them.
11 doubleheaders?
11 doubleheaders. That wasn't all in Chicago, but in...
That's a great record there. Did you like Comiskey Park, the pitching, with all those long distances? The long distances there?
Oh, yeah.
You couldn't hit them out of the park there very well.
Not too much, not too often. But,
did Al Simmons come over to the White Sox when you were there?
No.
Or was he there?
Uh-uh. He was at County Mike all the way through.
Well, tell me about, was Jimmy Dykes managing?
He managed, yeah.
The White Sox?
Yeah.
How'd you like him?
Oh, he was great. He was hell-bent for action. He was really, he knew his stuff, too. And he had trained a third base coach and his first base coach. He could, if he wanted to do a deal, I mean, Jimmy, he'd be sitting like this on the front of the dugout and say, like that. And he had worried that the other club wouldn't know that that meant signs. He didn't move his head or anything like that.
He kind of made motions with his mouth.
With his
mouth. Outside of his mouth, which were actually signals.
Yeah, actual signals.
Huh. Pretty good way to do it. He handled ball players pretty well? Jimmy? Dykes?
Oh, yes. Fraternized to the ball players all day long.
And it worked in his case, though. Yeah. I mean, there was a distance that they respected, but yeah. They still got along.